Have you ever sat down in your favorite comfy chair on a dark and stormy night and kicked your feet up to listen to some true crime? And as the story unfolds itself, you think, seriously, what the frick? Well, this episode is sponsored by Seriously, What the Frick, a true crime podcast where a mix of true crime and comedy comes to light. Every Friday, Daphne, one of the most unserious people on the planet, will take you on a serious case or conspiracy that will make you say, seriously, what the frick? Daphne has this talent of making even her darkest stories lighthearted, but without ever being disrespectful. The best part is 25% of her monthly proceeds from Patreon and her merch store, her merch is to die for, by the way, goes towards foundations like the DNA Doe Network and the Cold Case Foundation to help give the people that she talks about the justice they deserve. You can find Daphne's podcast, Seriously, What the Frick, anywhere you listen to podcasts. And thanks again to Seriously, What the Frick for sponsoring this episode.
What's that? You want to be scared? Come with me. You will experience tales of horror, ghosts, and death. It is not recommended for the weak at heart. Listen in the dark. It's more fun that way. This is Weekly Spooky.
Hello, my friends. It's Wednesday, and you know what that means, don't you? It's time for a little spooky in your weekly, and I'm just the man for the job. My name is Henrik Kuto. I'm your host and narrator, and this week we have something extra special for your ears. We have a family feel-good story, as only Weekly Spooky can bring it to you. And I'm not kidding here. I'm not trying to fake you out by saying, you know, oh, it's a family story, and the story is about, like, the family eating their mother or something. No, this is a story about familial bond, love, connection, and all of the mayhem, violence, and etc. you've come to expect from the show. But before we get to this story, I want to remind you, if you have a moment and haven't already, click that subscribe button on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube or wherever you're listening to the program, and make sure to leave us a 5-star review. We just got a brand new 5-star on our Apple Podcast page, and it really does help people find the show. As they're scrolling through all of their scary story options, when they see we have 90 reviews and they're mostly positive, they're much more likely to click on over. So wherever you listen to this podcast, leave us a positive rating. And if you want to go one step beyond that, go to weeklyspooky.com and select Patreon. And for as little as $1 a month, you can ensure that the spooky is brought every single week. And I want to see us hit 100 backers this year. We're at 83 right now. We just got a brand new one yesterday. So please, help us keep it going. But for now, I'm far too excited to wait any longer. It's time to hear the story. Enjoy, my friends. I'll be back after to chat with you a little bit more.
Love, Burgers, and the Open Road by David O'Hanlon.
I'm taking you to your father's, was all Uncle Curtis said. He never looked at me. His cold, sterling glare stayed locked to the jaundiced, bloodshot eyes of my mother. I packed quickly. I loved my mom, but I hadn't seen her in a long time. Morphine and cheap vodka took her away from me. Whatever sleazeball she brought home normally left enough money on the dresser after she passed out that I could go get bread and some bologna to survive on until the school provided lunch. A week into summer vacation, and I was starting to miss those guaranteed meals. Dad split when I was 5. Maybe the last 8 years had taught him how to be a father. Maybe a summer without me would help Mom get her priorities in order. Or maybe she'd party harder and OD. Life is full of maybes. The zombie on the couch picked at the bruised, scabbed needle marks on her arm and didn't bother telling me goodbye as I went with her big brother. Uncle Curtis left the door open for her to have one more chance to say anything. He opened the cab of the truck and helped me into the passenger seat. I heard the front door slam. "Probably for the best," Uncle Curtis said without looking back. The Kenworth W900 was the only thing my uncle owned. Pictures hung where they fit with double-sided tape. Everything else was split up between his three ex-wives. He made some small talk, asked how school was going, if I'd gotten my first whiskers yet, any girls caught my eye, the usual stuff. He didn't once mention Mom. I was okay with that. We picked up a trailer full of used tires on our way out of Houston. Curtis told me he took the small gigs to pay for the diesel he needed to get the big jobs like the one we were heading to next.
"I haven't heard from him," I said softly.
"Who's that?" He glanced over and sighed. "Oh, he's living in Nashville."
"Does he know I'm coming?"
Uncle Curtis nodded. "We all make mistakes, Brad."
"Leaving your family is only a mistake?"
"It's complicated," Curtis sighed. "The place me and your mama grew up, well, it was a bad place. I went to Vietnam to get away from it. War seemed easier. Cleaner. She didn't have a war to run away to. All she could find was another young dipshit to distract her."
"Dad?"
"Yeah. They were just having fun until they were too far down the rabbit hole. Your old man thought if he left, she'd get away from the things they were into and focus on you. Instead, he got clean and she... well, shit. Maybe I should have never left her in that godforsaken place."
"It's not your fault." I looked out my window thoughtfully. "At least you came to get me."
"It's a long drive to Nashville." He reached over to pat my shoulder. "Guess I better make up lost time and teach you about the good things in life." The first lesson came at the Heart of Dixie truck stop outside of Lufkin. The microwave dinged and Uncle Curtis opened the door with a wide, snaggle-toothed smile beneath his toilet brush mustache. He slipped the nuke cheeseburger onto a styrofoam plate. "Bone apple teeth," he declared. "Go on and grab us a booth. You'll want to let it sit for a minute so the flavor really gets into the bun." I took the plate and found a seat. The bright yellow cheese melted neatly over the edges of the two all-meat patties. The packaging hadn't specified what meats, and my rumbling stomach didn't particularly care. The bottom bun discolored as it soaked up seasoned grease. A sudden slap interrupted my investigation. A brown paper bag sat on the corner of the chipped table. Uncle Curtis gave me a wink and slipped into the booth opposite me. "Reading materials. For the road." He gestured toward my plate. "Also, very important." I picked up the burger. It was still hot, and I appreciated the burn after subsiding primarily on cold sandwiches. It smelled far better than anything coming out of a microwave had any right to. I bit in and groaned with pleasure. The charbroiled patties burst with complex flavors that shamed the Big Mac Mom got me every birthday. I greedily stuffed my mouth with two more bites. Uncle Curtis's laughter made me blush with sudden self-awareness. He waved for me to continue. "Never pass on the fine cuisine of your friendly eat-em-up," he said. "The distance between meals will make you appreciate them even more." "It has," I told him in between bites. Thunder rumbled outside, despite a still blue sky. Curtis checked his watch and leaned close to the window to look out. "Damn the luck," he said. 30 miles to go before we drop this load. We'll hit the town same time as that storm, sure as shit."
"Can we wait it out?" I asked. Curtis shook his head without looking at me. Supposed to be a some bitch of a storm. It was. Lesson 2 in Uncle Curtis's book of life was age-appropriate literature. I read the latest issue of Soldier of Fortune magazine with the aid of a bungee cord mounted lantern in the sleeper cab. The rain came down in sheets almost loud enough to muffle the thunder. Almost. I leaned around the driver's seat. "There's an ad in here for a book on how to fight," I said. "Oh, you'll see lots of those in SOF," he said with his trademark chipper grumble. "This one says I can learn how to kill a man with my thumb," I clarified. "Sounds like malarkey." "Oh ye of little faith," Curtis pointed to the glove box. "I actually have a copy of that one. It's a pretty good read. Check it out." I slipped back into my seat and found the hand-to-hand combat manual. I turned to the dog-eared pages first. A kneeling groin strike with complementary castration. Various ways to punch the throat. The proper way to gouge out an eye. My uncle smiled at my naive shock. "That's yours now. A boy has to know how to defend himself." "Don't you need it?" "No," he said, softer than normal. "I had those lessons already. It was a much rowdier classroom." I watched him drive in silence before turning my attention back to the manual. I paid close attention to the pages he'd marked and mimed the movements in the air, trying to visualize how they worked in real life. Curtis gave me pointers as he watched my practice from the corner of his eye. I made the adjustments as he suggested. The positive feedback was something new to me, and it made me want to try harder to impress him. He reached over and corrected my grip that the book said would tear a man's throat out. I attempted it again. My uncle beamed with pride. I'd never been happier, or felt more loved than I did right then. I wasn't sure it mattered. After all, I'd probably never need to kill a man with my bare hands. Then again, it really was a long road to Nashville. I woke up to the squawking of the CB radio. 10-9, my uncle said. I crawled into my seat and stretched away the few hours of sleep.
"Bears, wall to wall,"
another voice said.
"Looking for a runner from Pascualito."
Some bitch. Ain't that just a kick in the pants? Curtis pressed the button. 10-4. "What does all that mean?" I asked. "Means we're riding double nickels until they finish their business." He pointed at swirling red and blue lights on the horizon. "San Pasqualito is a loony bin full of murderers. The bad kind." "As opposed to the good kind?" "I'm just saying, I understand a man shooting folks. Pascual is for those less civilized sorts. Cannibals, Satanists, serial killers, fellas that like to poke their peckers into dead things. Whoever they're looking for, it ain't someone we want to find. We're going to get up the road a ways. There's a nice place called Moonlight Drive. We'll get some more burgers there and a shower." I hadn't considered how Curtis handled basic things like showering. I started to ask and he held up a knowing finger. "Brad, let me tell you something." He smiled with fond reminiscence. "Nothing feels better than washing all the kinks of the road out of your body with a nice, hot shower. Just make sure you wear some flip-flops. Don't want to get the clap between your toes." "What's the clap?" I asked. "Which brings us to another important life lesson. The girls at Moonlight Drive do not really think you're handsome, and that bargain rate comes with a different kind of price." My uncle laughed hard and shook his head. "Just trust me." I had no idea what he was talking about, but I did trust him. He taught me more in a few hours than either of my parents. We passed a pair of parked cop cars, and I waved at the silhouette of the state trooper on my side. I was sure he couldn't see me through the storm, but it seemed like the right thing to do. My uncle gave me a towel that smelled strongly of bleach, a pair of brand new flip-flops, and a thumbs up. I went to the shower and nervously undressed before stepping into the stall. By God, Uncle Curtis was right. I'd been a trucker for all of 6 hours, and the scalding hot water was the best damn feeling in my admittedly short life. I could only imagine how it must have felt to someone that lived in their truck all the time. I cleaned myself quickly and then leaned my forehead against the tile wall. I thought about what Mom was probably doing. What it would be like meeting Dad for basically the first time. And how Curtis had been more of a parent in a quarter of a day than they had been in 13 years. Crying all of that out felt almost as good as the shower. When I finally stepped out, I had lost all sense of time. The other four stalls were seemingly occupied, and I set about drying myself as fast as I could. I'd never been naked around other people, or around naked people. I wasn't sure what the protocols were for that sort of thing. I pulled my jeans on and slipped my feet back into my flip-flops, no longer focused on potential embarrassment or awkward nude conversations. I began to take in my surroundings and noticed the stall doors were open. "Is anyone there?" I called. No one answered. It wasn't a lesson Curtis taught, but it should have been. Never ask if anyone's there. It's not like some fucking psycho is going to say, "Yeah, pal, I'm over here behind the curtain." Just keep your goddamn mouth shut like I didn't. Instead, I walked through the steam trying to wave it away. The light shifted through the more relaxing environment of the shower room to the garish bathroom. It was in that weird merger of contrasting illumination that I saw the figure run by. My hasty attempt at drying off left my underwear wet. At least that's the lie I was telling myself in that moment. A crash came from the bathroom, followed by another. The lights inside flickered violently in their battered fixtures. I took a deep breath and tried to sound much older as I shouted for someone to answer me. They kept their mouth shut because they were smarter than I was. In the bathroom, all seemed calm. No one jumped out to kill me. No one was there at all. Keeping my back to the row of sinks and my eyes on the stalls, I inched through the space quickly. Most of the toilet doors were open, giving me some peace of mind. Under the last door, I saw a pair of cowboy boots with the required Wranglers around their embroidered ankles. A strange puddle drew my eyes to the urinals. I tried to ignore it. I wanted to run through the moonlight drive and out to Uncle Curtis's truck. I didn't. The scent of ammonia and old pennies grew stronger, with each step closer to the dark pool. Next to the half-dissolved urinal puck was a severed dick. My flip-flops thwack, thwack, thwacked frantically as I backpedaled. I'd caught mine with the zipper before. Maybe this was just an extreme case. Maybe the cowboy in the shitter was the owner. Maybe he was the penis pruner and mine would be next. Life is full of maybes, you know? I gave the door a quick shove, and it came open with ease, banged off the partition, and shut again. The half second it was open was long enough to prove he was the owner of the disembodied dangle rod. I sprinted through the bathroom and into the narrow hall beyond, running full bore into the hideous orange wall. My footwear sounded more ridiculous than my pubescent screeching as I bolted to the main part of the truck stop. Then my thwacking became splatting, and next thing I knew, I was on my back. It took a moment to get my breath back into my lungs. My skin peeled from the gory linoleum with the same noise your legs make on vinyl car seats in the summer. It was a toss-up which was wider, the shocked eyes on the trucker or the gash in his throat as he stared at me from his spot on the floor. Bubbles popped in the pooled blood in his mouth. I managed to stay quiet. To this fucking day, I don't know how. I pressed myself up from the floor. Another body was slumped over a table with his brains spilling from the back of his skull across the laminated tabletop. The woman across from him was blinking at me on either side of the hatchet, bisecting her face. Her sneakers squeaked softly in the puddle beneath her as her foot twitched in a post-mortem attempt to flee. Better late than never. A fourth victim was mostly hidden by bags of Cheetos where he'd crashed through a display. Two more laid on the path to the door. I stepped over another and went to the counter with the microwaves. Out of the corners of my eyes, I saw others. Truckers, lot lizards, store employees, and so much fucking blood.
39 years, a voice said, wearily. The speaker gave a bemused grunt. And 8 months. Lots of lost time to make up for.
I reached for the little refrigerator, full of assorted microwavable food choices, and opened it, collecting 2 double cheeseburgers of the brand we'd had at the Heart of Dixie.
Never pass up the fine cuisine of your friendly eat-em-up, I said before turning to face the killer.
I am rather famished. The man wore a denim shirt and brown trousers with a simple mask made of a stained pillowcase. His blue eyes stared at me through the mismatched holes he'd cut out to see.
This work, it takes a lot out of you.
I put a burger in the microwave and set the timer. 90 seconds. You never really consider the possibility that the last moments of your life will be so precise. I watched the entree turn on the glass plate. The green digits on the timer counted down my remaining time on Earth. The killer came beside me and put his hands on the counter.
That's a hell of a thing.
He pointed his bloody finger at the appliance.
I wonder what all changed while I was gone.
I'm guessing it was probably a lot. I'm Brad.
Did your father name you that?
He asked. I don't know. I'd never thought on how I'd gotten my name.
Maybe, I guess. My father didn't name me, nor my mother.
His voice was as devoid of emotion as his hooded face. The newspapers, they gave me a name for the first time in my life. They called me the Phantom Killer. Doesn't really roll off the tongue. I laughed a little and bit my lip, hoping he wouldn't cut my head off for the faux pas.
Can I call you PK? Suppose that would be fine.
Why'd you do all this, PK?
Why not?
You shouldn't answer a question with a question, I told him. Why did they deserve to die?
Why did they deserve to live?
PK leaned on the counter and crossed his arms over his narrow chest.
A man will love his wife and then beat her. A woman will love her husband and fuck his brother. People will go to a man's funeral, but not his birthday party. We throw the word love around, but it's only a superficial thing. Our value is realized by our demise. Until you're gone, it's only a word. It's through death that love becomes an actual, quantifiable emotion. Because of me, they will all be loved, endlessly.
The microwave dinged, derailing my train of thought, which was chugging uncomfortably towards understanding. I eased the burger onto a styrofoam plate and slid it to PK. He rolled the mask up over his nose and leaned down to smell it. He made a pleased sound and licked his lips. Silver scruff covered his gaunt, wrinkled face. He would kill me and take off the mask, and then he'd disappear. He was just some old man waiting for a crowd to get lost in.
You should let the burger sit for a minute, I said. It lets the flavor really get into the bun. Suppose that means we have time to finish this.
He rolled the mask back down and shrugged. I'm sure there'll be a lot of folks at your funeral, Brad. I'll do it so it won't hurt much.
I can't make the same promise, I said. He reached behind him, and I dropped to a knee. I lashed out like Uncle Curtis's manual showed me. My palm struck his groin, and PK buckled. His face came down, and my hands shot up to meet it. My thumbs slipped past the moist orbs and disappeared inside his eye sockets. I felt something cold bang against my ribs. The sudden warmth of blood cascading down my side made me jump away. PK screamed and spun around, slashing wildly at the air. I was too distracted by the gash across my side to notice the eyeball, clutched in my fist. When I did, I flung it away with a less than intimidating squeal. The phantom killer sprang forward with a fruitless lunge. His follow-up shot got much closer. More blood trickled from the tidy cut he left in my lip. The taste focused my attention. The knife was drawing back. PK's weight sank. He'd spring one more time and put all 7 inches of steel straight through my heart. I thought about Uncle Curtis, probably one of the bodies lining the aisles, and how happy he'd been when he showed me how to execute the movements in the martial arts booklet. I lunged in and did it just like he showed me. The knife clattered to the floor. PK stood up straight and stumbled away from me. The neck of the hood fluttered with a strange, gurgling hiss. The viscera slipped between my fingers, and I let it splat to the checkerboard linoleum. The killer collapsed to his knees, still watching me with his one eye. I picked up the burger. The burn felt good on my fingertips. I took a big, greedy bite.
"Will anyone love you, PK?" I asked through the flavor burst of the all-meat patties.
The phantom killer raised his shirt enough to reveal a composition book in his waistband. He wrestled it out and fell on his face. Before he faded, he slid it to me. I picked it up and hopped onto the counter. Uncle Curtis taught me the importance of good reading materials, so I sat there and ate my burger and read the scribbled manifesto of a madman. A bell tinkled over the door.
"What the Sam hell happened here?" Curtis asked.
I looked up at him with both relief and confusion. His hand was down the back of some woman's cut-off shorts. The Aquanet holding her perm in place had been given the challenge of its life, and her Motley Crue t-shirt was both backwards and inside out. While I'd been fighting for my life, my uncle had been banging a hooker. I swallowed the bite I was chewing and laughed.
"Still a long drive to Nashville," I said, sliding down the counter.
"Is she coming with us?"
"No,"
Curtis looked around.
"I ain't fucking staying here," she wailed.
"Well, shit, all her clients are dead, so
guess she might as well."
"What happened?"
"Psycho from the loony bin."
I slipped the notebook into the back of my jeans. "I'll go grab my stuff."
Hell, I guess so. Me and Marla will go get the truck in order."
Uncle Curtis married Marla 6 weeks later and divorced her 4 months after that. Go figure. Mom got into rehab while I was gone and died of an overdose 3 days after she got out. Relatives I never met came to her funeral. It seems PK was right. I went to live with my dad full-time and spent my summers with Uncle Curtis on the rig. Now I have my own and all the lessons he gave me. One of them being that life can't be about what you have. It has to be about what you do. And that's where another set of lessons comes in. The composition book is battered and falling apart now. Pages have been lost or damaged to the point where they can't be read any longer. It's more for sentimental value nowadays. I've started writing my own, expanding on PK's teachings and philosophy. There's a lot of road out there, and a lot of people that need to be loved. That's what I do. So, when you're out there on the highway, and you feel like no one cares,
Just flash your lights at the first semi you see. Maybe it'll be me. Maybe I'll make them all love you. After all, life is full of maybes.
Did you see what I mean there? I mean, yes, it was twisted. Yes, it was gruesome. Yes, it was bloody. But there was a real whole heart to that story that really connected with me. And I think it might connect with a lot of you too, so I hope you enjoyed that. Also, it's amazing. It took almost 130 episodes before we finally featured the Phantom Killer. I know, I didn't even know that was a goal I had set for myself, but apparently we've reached it, and I couldn't be prouder. So I hope you're all doing very well. I hope you're all remaining as well as possible, taking care of yourselves, listening to lots of fun stuff. I just saw the horror movie X in the theater. I had an awesome time with it. I am not being paid to say this, but if you happen to see that X is playing in your local theater and you like slasher movies, go see it. Do yourself a favor. Speaking of favors, I want to say a humongous thank you to all the Patreon backers who help make the show happen every single week. When you become a Patreon backer, you get access to all kinds of behind-the-scenes content, videos, audio, photos, and so much more for as little as $1 a month, and it guarantees that we keep going. We're at 83 backers. Can we get to 100 this year? It would really mean a lot to me. So consider, if you have a dollar or more, heading to weeklyspooky.com and clicking on Patreon, helping join us. But speaking of which, I want to say a humongous thank you to our Patreon podcast boosters, people who pay just a little bit more to have their voice spoken on the show. And they are Christopher Sullivan, Kathy Proquet, Gino Lyons, Karen Wiemet, Jack Kerr, Jeff and George Hilton, Craig Cohen, and Kevin Fry. Thank you all so much for allowing me to keep on doing this. We're heading into almost 3 years. I couldn't be happier. But for now, I gotta get out of here. I got some very special secret things I'm up to, and maybe one day I'll let you in on them. But for now, for our executive producer Rob Fields, our producer Dan Wilder, and our composer Ray Mattis, I will talk at you later.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to find your way back next week. But for now, you are safe. Trust me.